Dickerens, believing Catholics. Only God knows. And I would say, I venture to say, except the youngest member here in class knows the terrific pressure which this puts on our Catholic consciences because of the universal denial on Protestantism that marriage, sacramental marriage, is indissoluble. Problems arising from mixed marriages, which I've spoken about. And I repeat that one of the conditions for a valid marriage is that both parties believe they are entering into a lifetime commitment. What if, for years, they've never, I don't say heard about lifetime commitment, but never really believed it, and they enter marriage, that marriage is not valid? In widespread practice of granting annulments, this is in the 1950s, so it's 40 years ago. One of my former teachers was just assigned to teaching in Rome. On one occasion, I was in Rome on business. By that time, I was ordained a priest. He told me he was working for the Rota. That's the branch of the Vatican which takes care of marriage cases. And he said, I know we now have on the books over 35,000 cases. They couldn't cope. So what did Pope Paul VI do? No pope in human history has ever done this. And I'm not sure how this will continue. Only God knows. Paul VI, for the first time in over 1900 years, gave bishops the right to pass judgment on the validity of a previous marriage. Well, the bishops picked it up, shall I say, with gusto. There were whole books written on how to get an annulment. You know that. And before I go on to the next part, the Catholic Church will survive only 2,000 years of history to prove it. The Catholic Church will survive only that there are still bishops, priests, and many people who still believe that a sacramental, valid, consummated marriage cannot be dissolved by anyone, including the Bishop of Rome. And the last 1,000 years, this has been the main reason why whole countries have lost their Catholic faith. And even as I'm speaking, I say to myself, I think it might be wiser, given the importance of this subject, what if we do this? It is now on my borrowed watch, 3 minutes to 4. What if we do this now? What if we answer questions now and finish this class on marriage, divorce, and celibacy on October the 29th. How's that? This is much too important for all of us. Let me have some questions, please. Sorry, bring up the box, please. Oh, yes. Why are our parishes being called faith communities instead of more traditional titles? We used to refer to it as the parish family or something similar. The expression faith communities is something which those have introduced who are uncomfortable with a Catholic Church as a divinely instituted society. And the key word is instituted. The Catholic Church is an institution. To call a parish a faith community is to be using unqualified, untarnished, plain Protestant vocabulary. Okay? Because at the heart of what we call Protestant ecclesiology, in Protestantism, Christ did not found a visible institution called the Catholic Church. He just didn't. There are two standard definitions in all world Protestantism for now almost 500 years. The church is the society of all believers. So now we have a faith community. Or the church is the society of all the predestined. Two basic definitions of the church in Protestant theology. And by the way, when I taught my Protestant students, they better know this, otherwise they flunk. Of course, being a Catholic priest and a Jesuit, can you imagine my not telling them what the real meaning of the church is? And talk about a miracle of grace. And they paid me to my superiors for teaching them. In other words, a parish is not, first of all, it should be a faith community. You ought to have the same faith. But it's not only a faith community. It is a parish with identifiable people. And there should be even a certain territory within which, well, they live. There are certain things which these people do together. And above all, they have certain definite rules, laws, and requirements which identify an institution. You know, for general morals, you better follow general moral rules, right? It's an institution. It's not, believe me, a faith community. What a safe statement. Are there any good charismatic groups? Well, by now you've heard me say so much about charismatics. God bless them. God bless the charismatics. Oh, of course there are good charismatics. But then, if you press me, the charismatic movement, as by now we should all know, is a movement which believes that they are specially gifted by the Holy Spirit. they receive certain charisms, which others who are not charismatics do not receive. Now, I would say, subjectively before God, I'm sure there are many good charismatics. In fact, I like to think that all, subjectively, all charismatics are very good people. But then if you press me, and you ask me, but is the charismatic movement, as a movement, good, then I have to begin to qualify. Because, as I've said so often, the charismatic movement is a development. John Wesley first, then the holiness movement, then the Pentecostal movement, and then the charismatic movement. So, how many steps? Wesley, Methodism, holiness churches, Pentecostalism, and the charismatics. At this point, I could talk for hours. I've got enough for 3 books on the charismatic movement. I've got so much other writing to do, I just have not had the time to write those books. Thank you for the question. Maybe a good answer would be this. Charismatic groups are as good as they are Catholic. How's that? Should priests be involved in Father Gobi's Marian movement of priests? Well, that is, I would say, a loaded question. The person doesn't realize it. Father Gobi himself, as you know, believes he has been having revelations. 4 priests call them locutions. Those locutions of Father Gobi have never been officially approved by the Catholic Church. Now, having said that, that's one side of the Marian movement, 4 or 5 priests. However, there's another side. These priests meeting periodically, for example, in Detroit. And I can tell you this, I examine my conscience when at Assumption Grotto, where I have my offices now, as you know. Offices. God, 2 rooms now. I can't believe it. They have regular meetings of the Marian priests. So I prayed and asked, Lord, what should I do? Should I attend these meetings? I do. And why? Because there's exposition of the Blessed Sacrament. There's a fine harmony given for us priests, which we can use. We have benediction. And we get a good meal. So, in its origins, in its alleged claims to being the fruit of divine revelations to Father Gobi, what was the question? Should priests be involved? Well, I think for most priests who are in the Marian movement, they don't reflect on or go to these meetings because they believe Father Gobi's locutions are genuine. Am I making sense? So I would say it is good for priests to be involved in the Marian movement of priests. You notice I skipped Father Gobi's name. Am I still making sense? I spent 1.5 hours in conversation with Father Gobi on his invitation. I think I've shared this with you. And I could be in correspondence with Father Gobi, but I don't think it's necessary. And even the Holy Father, as you know, has spoken, hasn't he, to the priest in the Marian movement, when they came to Rome, he distinguished. The Pope can make the distinction, so can I. Can you jeopardize your Catholic faith by believing in people who claim to receive message in the form of interior locutions, or by an apparition that is not approved by the Church yet? Those that have stopped, and especially those that are still going on. Can you jeopardize your Catholic faith? Yes. Yes. In three ways. First of all, if the claimed locutions or revelations have not been approved by the Church, they may contain locutions which are not true, meaning the contrary to the Catholic faith. Once you believe it's a locution, then that's it. So you can jeopardize your faith by accepting untruths which claim to be divine locutions. Secondly, people who have become, you might say, habituated to either participating in these programs or reading and believing in these locutions are wasting a lot of time. The same time they are getting to these locutions, and both the reading and the practice that follow should be devoted to reading what is known for sure to be the Catholic Church's teaching, and practicing such devotions as are approved by the Church. And thirdly, and this in the way is the hardest, as people come to believe more and more in these, again, locutions or private revelations, they become more and more, shall I call it, interiorized in their Christianity. They become more and more separated from the real world in which they are living. And I've seen this, and in depth. They can become so, you might say, psychologically changed. Now, they're really living, and I have to use the term, in a dream world. Am I clear? Thank you for the question. Is Father Gobi approved, endorsed by the Pope? No, not as Father Gobi. People claim Father Gobi is approved by the Pope because the two of them meet monthly. Well, I doubt it. And that the two of them have their photos taken together. I just recently saw a picture in the pronunciation Arafat. Arafat? Is it right? A-R-A-F-A-T? A beautiful photo of the Holy Father on one side of the table and a Muslim on the other. That means the Father, the Holy Father, approves. Should people be praying over and being prayed over for every little ache and pain or trouble in their life? That is, prayer group weekly meetings, going to reading masses to be prayed over, we're not certainly ill. I do not approve that. And this is, by the way, part of the same thing that I've just identified before. Here in Detroit, a couple of years ago, I was asked to give a lecture. I give a lecture. I think he closed with benediction. Then I was able to the sacristy. I couldn't believe my eyes. All over the place, in church, there are people being prayed over. What is the purpose of the 1 million men Negro March in Washington, D.C., scheduled for tomorrow, or Monday, October the 16th? I would not know. I would not know. Sorry. If a person has married someone who has received an annulment in the last few years, committing adultery, and measuring their happiness in heaven? No. I have to see what I'm saying, otherwise I will be telling you the truth. But what an annulment has been granted by legitimate ecclesiastical authority, I tell the people, you may accept that annulment as genuine, and then your conscience will be clear. Say, to remarry and raise a family by someone else. However, this I think I've said before, remember, every annulment can be challenged. Now there's a time limit, but after, say, an annulment where one party just the annulment and against the wishes and even the express documentation of the other, the one who believes the marriage was valid, even though an annulment was granted by, say, a local diocese, that person can write to Rome, and if Rome accepts the petition, then the bishop is informed, please tell your party who got the annulment, he or she cannot enter into a valid marriage. There are people whom I've helped through the Holy See to get a reversal of their annulments, and then the partner, sometimes for years, can no longer enter into a valid marriage. Now, of course, Rome has to pass a judgment, even while the case is under investigation in Rome. The declaration of nullity, if appealed, is not valid until approved by the Holy See. Should a person who is claiming to have apparitions of our Blessed Mother accept gifts from people who believe you are seeing and receiving messages from Our Lady? No. A little louder. No. There are two standard tests. There are many others, but there are two standard tests for recognizing a genuine mystic, or in this case, say, having received genuine locutions or revelations, say, from Our Lady. The first is humility. And part of that humility is obedience to church authority. And the second is absolute detachment from any prophet. And over the years, having so many times worked for the church, in, what shall I say, investigating these revelations. If I find out a person is making money and 50 cents would be enough, that's the end of it. And Veronica Lucan, as you know, has been going on for years in Brooklyn, New York. Mazuma. Well, I have 418. Now, as usual, anybody wants to leave, you are welcome. Then we go to 4:30 with the questions. Is that agreeable? Then we'll break. And then we don't have to answer all the questions. Then I told you, next class, we will continue with a subject, remember, of marriage, divorce, and celibacy. What are the rules governing when a communion service can or should be used in the Catholic Church during the week? There are several Catholic churches within miles of each other that have morning masses during the week except one. This church has a communion service on the day off of the pastor. Well, only God judges. And I know how well I know there are many such churches. Only God judges the priest. But a priest, even if he's unable-bodied, he has to be carried to the altar and has to sit down during Mass. He should say daily Mass. That's what I've been teaching priests over the years. Well, I hesitate reading this, but let me read it anyhow. Thank you for being a channel of grace to us. We thank God for allowing us to be here with you. But I mean it. I mean with all my heart. I thank God for you. And the younger you are, the more happy I am. How old are you? And the baby, I can't ask the baby. Oh, is it? How much? 2 weeks. The younger you are, the better. Am I clear? Because you are carrying the faith into the future. I promise to help you, I trust, from heaven. Is a priest still required to say a Mass every day? Is it ever a good idea to not say Mass for a week, so it will be more meaningful the next time it is said? Must be a very educated priest who invented that excuse. No. Yes. A priest should say Mass every day. And even though he is not bound under sin by the church's canon law to say Mass every day, I teach and I tell priests, if you don't say Mass on a given day, then you have a very, very powerful reason. And I made every effort to provide a Mass to be said for the people who would attend your Mass. I tell priests, for 48 years, you've committed sin. Okay? Either laziness, or lack of faith, or some other failing of human nature. One of the requirements for a valid marriage is that it be consummated. So please explain the marriage between Mary and Joseph, which, as we know, was never consummated because of Mary's vow of virginity. Well, a marriage is valid when the two parties know what they're getting into. In other words, they want to marry for a lifetime. They want to give each other themselves, want to have children. Then, as Christians, if they've been married, they receive the sacrament. Two Presbyterians, validly baptized, receive the sacrament of matrimony. Now the consummation. Consummation is necessary for the indissolubility. Consummation is not necessary for either the validity or the sacramental efficacy of a marriage. Let me repeat. A couple marry and say they cannot consummate. Now, as I think I've told you, when I'm not sure how much of this we covered, but sterility by itself does not invalidate a marriage. Remember? The fact that either or neither are fertile does not make that marriage invalid. It is only when not only is there sterility, but impotency. So as long as the married couple could conceive, get it? As long as they could conceive, then their marriage is not only valid, but is also indissoluble. But hear it. Just because a couple do not have intercourse has nothing to do with a marriage. A marriage has all the blessings of God just because they exchange the marriage vows. And therefore, the marriage of Mary and Joseph was truly valid, truly holy, and since the sacrament of matrimony was not yet instituted, this is speculation. Did Mary and Joseph receive the sacrament of marriage? Well, the better theological position is no. Why not? Because they received all the graces they needed without receiving the sacrament. How's that? Was it a real marriage? Yes. Was it a holy marriage? Yes. Now, and putting Mary and Joseph to one side, but now, a couple who have married and did not consummate, and notice, they must have natural intercourse. Contraceptives do not consummate a marriage. Whether on his part or she on her part, taking some contraceptive pill, that can go on for 20 years. That marriage is not consummated. Contraceptive intercourse does not consummate a marriage. Now the next question. Can that marriage be dissolved? Yes. And by the way, not a few of the so-called annulments, which is the wrong word, are really not annulments, but non-consummated marriages because they practice contraception from the day they were married. Am I clear? Our local parish will be hosting a mystic who bears the wounds of Christ as a guest speaker. Should we encourage attendance? Oh no, don't encourage attendance. But part of my work for the church is to find out what's going on. if I can say this, I don't use the word encourage. I would not encourage anybody to attend. But I would say, if you want to go, go, but on one condition, that you then provide me with a written, detailed report. Is that fair? Because then I can use that knowledge. I'll never forget the stigmatic that I interviewed in my, well, New York residence in Manhattan. He showed me the stigmata. He was a fake. One more question, and then it's 4:30. Should we support Human Life International? Some bishops and priests seem to have a big problem with this organization. Oh. And I'm being taped, right? First, by all means, support Human Life International. And those who have trouble with Human Life International, I would say, have deeper problems, which, if they resolve those problems, they would welcome Human Life International with open arms. And now, would you mind turning off the